Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. It is Wednesday, July 29th, 2015. Happy Hump Day. This is episode 56 of the Hockey Guys Podcast. Yours truly, Hunter Crowther, with my co-host, Chris Shannon. No music today because we have horrible technical difficulties. But today's episode is brought to you by Just Dish and Hockey. Think about this, folks. You're walking down the street, beautiful day, and all of a sudden, bam, sun in your eyes, day's ruined. What are you going to do? Are you going to go to some sunglasses kiosk for a pair of $10 no-names? Of course not. Go to justdishandhockey.com and check out their top quality selection of shades to rock for the rest of the summer. Chris, we have something special for our listeners. Tell them what we have planned.
Yeah, we have something cool. Our sponsor, Just Dish and Hockey, has given us a shirt and hat to give away free to one of our followers. All you have to do is follow the Hockey Guys main account. You'll see a tweet about the contest. You favorite, retweet, and follow the account. And you'll see all the instructions on the tweets when you follow the Hockey Guys. And if you do all this, you are entered into the draw for a free Just Dishing shirt and hat. And I'm telling you, it's an amazing deal. The hat and shirt, I mean, it's gonna be worth a lot, and we'll figure it out. It may be a hat, it may be sunglasses, shirt, but we'll see what people think. And remember, follow the Hockey Guys, and we'll have that all that info done this week, and it's gonna be a fun one. And hopefully, everyone gets in the draw, and good luck.
Yeah, good luck. Honestly, they're great sunglasses. It's top quality stuff. I'm not just saying this because they're a sponsor. I'm not saying this because I want as many free merchandise as I can get. I'm saying this because it truly is top quality stuff. Their sunglasses are out of this world. They're at the same level of Maverick and Goose and Top Gun wearing the aviators, only I think they're just a little bit better. That's just my personal opinion. But anyway, yeah, make sure you go on to Twitter, retweet and save in the Hockey Guys Twitter account. Check it out. We've got some great stuff coming up. When it comes to today's show, we're going to be joined by Vishal Hussain later in the hour. He's the former Oshawa Generals broadcaster and currently right now the sports director at OntarioSportsRadio.com. He's been a follower of the New Jersey Devils for as long as he's been born. So I guess we're going to talk a little bit of New Jersey Devils, some Lou Lamoriello, some Adam Larson. There's lots of stuff to cover. But Chris, where do you want to start right now? We got Brandon Sutter and Nick Bonino deal. Eric Fair signs in Pittsburgh. Sean Couturier just re-signed for 6 more years. And obviously, we still have this Derek Stepan deal that we haven't covered yet. I'm going to let you take it. Where do you want to go?
I think we started off with the trade that we saw yesterday happen, you know? Brandon Sutter for Bonino, and, you know, Pittsburgh got a steal. They even got more than just Sutter. Bonino. They got a good prospect. They got some good picks. And with that cap freedom, they were able to sign Eric Fair, who pretty much takes the exact role Sutter had with the Penguins. Rutherford did exactly what the Penguins had to do. He had to get depth for the organization. We've seen that they have a good top six, but it's now them working with their bottom six. I love this move. I think it was a great deal. Rutherford, you know, he really brought, you see it on Twitter. If you saw it when it went live, that trade, every fan was like, in the NHL was like, wow, the Pittsburgh Penguins are going to finally do this. And they're actually going to finally do this right, because they look like this team is going to be running for the cup this year. And who knows? I think they still have a couple more moves coming, you know. They still have to work a little bit with their defense. But I was surprised. That was too good of a trade for the Pittsburgh Penguins to get. You know, I don't know what Jim Benning was thinking. Brandon Sutter, great player, third line player. That's your third line center. They Pittsburgh Penguins have given him chances to be up there on top six. He's just not that type of player. That's not bad. He's a bottom six player. But yeah, like I said, Pittsburgh really robbed that trade, and Rutherford really got a good trade there. And I was very surprised to see that he got that much. And with the Eric Fair signing, I mean, I was surprised the guy didn't get signed before this time. I mean, he got signed July 28th. I mean, if you told me that a month ago, I'd be so surprised. When he was with Washington Capitals and him and Joel Ward were on a line, that was one of the best lines in that hockey in the playoffs. So, I mean, it surprised me for sure, but a good deal for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Like, They have instant credibility.
I certainly agree. And I feel like this offseason, Rutherford has made a lot of moves that, apart from the Kessel deal, because obviously he acquired an elite winger, which his team needed. He needed someone like that beside Crosby and Malkin. But for so long, we've criticized Pittsburgh's lack of depth. And especially going back to last season, when we thought that there was a chance they might choke, they might miss the playoffs, we were able to see them barely squeak in, and we saw that their lack of depth up front really hurt them. And when you add Eric Fair, who I love Eric Fair for the sense that he's from that famous 03 draft. He's a first-round pick, but he stayed in the league by being a relatively productive bottom six forward. You know, he'll get you 30 points. He's got size, and he's a very good third, fourth-line addition to that Pittsburgh unit, not to mention Brandon Sutter, who, you know, for the most part, he's really been a disappointment in a lot of ways, in the sense that he was in that infamous trade with Jordan Staal, remember, at the draft. And so much has been made about him as a player where we're expecting him to break out and be the talent that we all assumed. We thought that he'd be this first-round, you know, gifted power forward. But the reality with Brandon Sutter, I mean, his career high in points is 40. And that was last season. He had 21 goals. He's been a pretty mediocre possession player. And to be honest, you know, so much is made about his size, but whenever I've watched him, he's not overly physical. He's decent enough defensively, but if you remember when we had Ryan Wilson, who people know on Twitter as Gunnar Staal, we had him on the show in mid-April, and when we were talking about Brandon Sutter, he said he's a borderline NHLer. He's essentially an AHLer. He's just benefiting because of his status. And like you said, it's an interesting move on Benning's behalf. Maybe he sees something that we don't. Also worthy of mention, Jim Rutherford's traded Brandon Sutter twice now, despite him saying that he's one of his favorite guys. But overall, it's a good trade in Pittsburgh's behalf, because I think that slowly but surely they're adding, not only they had elite winger in Kessel, they're adding depth in their bottom six. And like you said, they still have to add on their blue line. But these are the types of moves that Pittsburgh needs to make if they want to be a team that plays past May.
Yeah, I was talking to one of my friends that's actually a Pittsburgh Penguin fan, and I was saying, you know, I was just texting him, and I was like, oh, your team may finally be able to, like, win a cup again. And he said, yeah, they're going to be finally good, which means Fleury's going to suck. And that's pretty much it. You know, like, last year they weren't a good team in the playoffs, but Fleury was solid. Then other years before that, they've had an amazing team in front of him, Fleury did, and he sucked. You know, it's just, Fleury does get a lot of hate, but it's pretty well, like, you can see why he has it. He's just not been consistent. So I think that's going to be a huge X factor for the Pittsburgh Penguins season. But, you know, let's move on. You know, the Pittsburgh Penguins, like, I don't want to keep on praising them, because I think there's going to be a lot of praising this year, because I really do think, like I said on last show, that these guys are going to become beasts in the East again. I like that little thing I did there, so I'm going to pass it on to you. Maybe we can talk a little step on.
It was really casual. No, you're getting good at this.
I didn't mean to. Yeah, it just came out. Yeah, I'm happy with that one.
No, you're very suave. Almost as smooth as Justish and Hockey sunglasses, which you can go to justishandhockey.com and check them out. All right.
That, James, I think you won that one. Yeah, you won that one.
I'm kicking ass and taking names. This is Hockey Guys Podcast. Let's move on to Derek Stepan right now. Now, earlier in the week, he signed a six-year, $39 million contract. The two sides were going to go to arbitration, but eventually they figured out and hammered out a deal. Last season in 68 games, Stepan had 16 goals and 39 assists. He's been a big factor for New York over the past two postseasons. You've seen that he's been a real contributing force for a team that's gone to back-to-back conference finals, as well as the Cup finals where they lost against Los Angeles. Chris, your initial thoughts on Stepan signing for pretty large chunk of money, an average of well over $6 million a year. But what do you think about this move for the young American forward?
Yeah, when I saw that deal, I didn't really love it. But you have to think about this. You know, the New York Rangers, Rick Nash, he's kind of going down. You know, he's not going to be making 40 goals. I think we've seen that. He's not that 40 goal scorer as much. I think he's more of a solid 30 goal scorer. So his play is kind of declining, and he's still a great player, but it's declining. Derek Brassard, he's for sure stepped up in the last years, but he's never going to be that 40 goal scorer. Chris Kreider and Derek Stefan are the guys that are going to have to take the reins, and they're going to be the ones that decide if the New York Rangers are still going to be a great team. You know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with that team. You know, who knows what happens with them? Like right now, they look like a good team, but in 5 years, you look at their future, it's not that great. You know, Henrik Lundqvist is getting older. You trade away Cam Talbot, who maybe was going to be your number one goalie. And you just got a lot of older guys. You know, you got Dan Boyle on that blue line, Kevin Kline, who's not getting any younger. Girardi's not getting any younger. You know, you got a solid piece in McDonough still. But Derek Stefan was a must sign, and, you know, they had to sign him. When you look at the deal, you know, he's making 6.5 average each year. Hey, they had to do it. We'll see how it works out, because who knows? This guy may become that 30, 40 goal scorer. He hasn't yet, but we've also seen him in the playoffs shine, him and Chris Kreider. So at first, I may not like the deal, but in a couple of years, he may become a bargain, just like that Max Pacioretty contract.
Without a doubt. And like you said, like the talent is there. And already at his age, like, we've seen some incredible production from him. The fact that he's already played for the United States at the international level, he was at Sochi in 2014. And the fact that he's nearly a point-a-game player already at this stage in his career, you have to think that he's a major building block on that Rangers lineup. Interesting, though, last season he had the second worst Corsi on the New York Rangers. But that could just be an outlier for a single season, but I'm just poking the bear. What other things do you think the Rangers have to do now? Like, they've gone to back-to-back conference finals, and on the show we've said that they seem like the beasts of the East. They have one of the best blue line cores. When we've had Sean Harnett on the show before, he's talked about how this New York Rangers squad has a lot of depth in their lineup, but is next year the season they're gonna make that hurdle? Is next year the year that they're gonna make the playoffs, or in this league where not the playoffs where they're gonna win the Stanley Cup, but in this league where there's a salary cap, it seems like your window for winning is so small. Even only after 2 years of a deep, deep playoff run, is that window closed for the New York Rangers?
I don't think it's closed yet, but I do think it's closing, and I think anyone would know that if they followed the New York Rangers. You know, this was supposed to be their big year with the acquisition of Keith Yandel, who, seriously, I know, like, you know, people liked his play. Keith Yandel, maybe 2 years ago, was supposed to be one of the best defensemen in the NHL. He played in a top, bottom two role. I mean, he was the number five or six defenseman with them, maybe four. He wasn't as good as everyone thought he was. They sent a big package in Duclair for him. The team, like I said, the team's not getting any younger as a whole. You know, they still have some core pieces, but I really do think in the next couple of years, this is where they have to win a cup, because they don't have that youth that's going to surprise everyone and make them a contender in 5 years, you know? This is now or never, and we'll see what happens with that. And I think that's the biggest part with the New York Rangers, is that they're going to have to hurry up and get this going. They've made the moves. You know, we've seen them make the moves. It's when are they going to finally get it all together? And, you know, last year you could have told me that they were going to be Stanley Cup contenders, and I would have said, yeah, for sure. But with that Keith Yandel acquisition, they look like they're going to win a cup. You know, that's really how they look like. They look like the Nashville Predators because they had that great defensive core. You tell me that this year, I watched them. They don't look as great as we all thought they would. And I really do think they're lacking some more forward depth and goal scoring, especially we saw that in the playoffs.
Yeah, and I feel like with this Rangers team, and then we're going to move on and talk. I really want to talk about Sean Couturier before we have Michelle come on. I feel like this Rangers team will only go as far as Henrik Lundqvist takes them. And despite the fact that last year they were still playing really well with Cam Talbot in net, and now that Talbot's jettisoned out of the city, I still feel, though, that in as far as he'll go, as far as Lundqvist will continue to be an elite goaltender, that's where the Rangers can go. So if Lundqvist can continue to be the player that he is, then the Rangers can still have this window of opportunity. But at his age, you have to wonder, when is that save percentage going to start to dip? When are some of those goals that go by him are going to be a little, I just feel like with this Rangers team, they've been so close and we're waiting for them to break through. And even when they played against the Kings in the final, you still had that sense of if Carey Price didn't get hurt in that series, they wouldn't have even advanced. I know the Rangers are still, possession-wise, they're an incredible hockey team. They won the President's Trophy last season. But you still have to ask the question, are they going to be able to break through the Stanley Cup Finals? And I guess next season we're going to have to find out. Some other recent news in the last 24 hours. Sean Couturier has signed a 6-year deal worth $26 million with the Philadelphia Flyers. The 22-year-old last season had career highs in all offensive categories. So far in the last two seasons, he's averaged 14 goals and 38 assists. What are your thoughts on this move from Philadelphia, where they don't have to wait a full year before he becomes an RFA? They have him locked in long-term at a pretty good rate. Chris, initial thoughts.
Yeah, I wouldn't look into those statistics as much, and his, like, meaning his goals and assists. You know, that's not what he does, and he's going to score the occasional couple goals. He's a good depth player, and he can play in your top six, but he's one of the best two-way forwards. He's 22 years old. He's been that – I mean, it seems like he's been in the league forever. I mean, I remember that series versus Pittsburgh Penguins, and remember in the playoffs, and that was absolutely a brutal series. It was just fights and fights. I mean, it was fun to watch, and it was reminiscent of the old days, but, I mean – it was a crazy series, and Sean Couturier surprised me every single game because he just knew how to skate. He looked like Patrice Bergeron out there. He could score. He came up clutch. He had the big goals. He was one of the greatest defensive guys out there. You know, Laviolette would put him out there in any situation. It seemed like he played every game, you know. So I wouldn't look at the goals right now and say, oh, yeah, he's not doing too great. I mean, that's a good contract. I love players, like, with his great – skill. I mean, that's what he has. You know, when you can play a two-way game, you're going to fit on any NHL team, especially a solid way game. 6 years for $26 million, what's not like, you know, $4.3 million, I think that's a steal, and I think the Flyers really got a great deal on that. Couturier, one of my favorite players, as you can see. I think the way he plays the game is right. He's a solid hockey player. He can fight. He can punch, you know, you in the face, but he'll still be able to have a solid defensive game and score some goals, and that's really, he's kind of like a definition of a Flyers player, is that he can do everything, and you build your franchise off that kind of guy. And that's another team I'd like to talk about, the Philadelphia Flyers, a little bit. What's going to happen with them? You know, they have some key players in Voracek, they've got Jerome, you know, Mason, Couturier now. When are they going to get their chance of making the cup? Are they going to ever make the cup run? They couldn't even make the playoffs last year. What do they need? What do you think they need? I mean, defense, I know they need some help, and maybe the goalie situation was cleared up a little bit, but what, like, I don't know what they have the forwards to do it, but it's finding that defenseman.
Well, they definitely need a blue line. They most certainly need more help on the blue line. As when your leading possession defenseman is Luke Shen, then the conversation's over. And not to mention, how did they get away with giving Sean Couturier this money, but they paid Andy McDonald elite blue line money? How does that happen?
Like, one of the worst contracts in the NHL.
One of the worst contracts, without a doubt. It's the blue line of David Clarkson. And I have to stop ripping on David Clarkson. It's been 6 months since he's been billed. It's getting borderline rude now. I'm at Sid Sixero, Andrea Bargnani level of pure hatred right now. But let's move on. You know, the thing with Couturier that I find so interesting is that even at his age, the amount of defensive responsibility that's been placed on his shoulder and the fact that he's been able to step up to it is really remarkable. Like, if you look at the numbers, he led Philadelphia in defensive zone faceoff percentage. So he took 38.7% of the faceoffs that he was on for in his defensive zone, and then he was last on the team in offensive zone faceoff percentage. So what it says to me is that Craig Berube, despite the fact he's a flawed coach and he might not even coach again in the NHL at the head coaching level, he put so much trust into a 21, 22-year-old to be his primary shutdown center. That's incredible. And not only that, he was able to step up to the task. My biggest thing with Couturier is I really hope his new head coach, Dave Hextall, he can come in and use Couturier in a more offensive role, not be afraid to put him out there on a power play, be comfortable with this young player getting more offensive opportunity, because when you, like you mentioned earlier, the comparable to Patrice Bergeron is not that far off. I mean, he at this stage in Bergeron's career compared to Couturier's career, they're very similar. And I think for the past few years, we've been waiting for Couturier to break through that wall. Like I said, over the past few years, he's only averaged less than 40 points. But at some point, he's going to break through. And you have to guess that with more offensive zone production, more time in the offensive zone and a better opportunity to play with line mates who can produce, the Philadelphia Flyers are a scary team. Like, and not to mention, we said it earlier, like Travis Konechny and Ivan Provorov, they had an incredible draft this offseason. The Flyers are looking upwards.
Yep.
And my last point on the Flyers, and we're still waiting for Vishal Hussain to come on. We're going to talk some Devils, keeping it in the old Atlantic division. But my last point on the Flyers, I really hope next year that Hakstol gives Steve Mason the starts that he deserves, because last season, despite the fact that Mason put up some really good numbers for a goaltender, I mean, after all these years where he's struggled, he's been up, he's been down, he was rookie of the year, and then he was a sieve, now he's back, and he was putting up 920 plus save percentage goaltending, he was getting benched a lot of the time, and he was not getting the respect that he deserved. So I'm really hoping next season that Hakstol can come in and recognize that he's got maybe not a top 10 NHL goaltender, but he's got a legitimate guy who can play a lot of, give him a lot of games. Don't be afraid to put him out there, because if he is the goaltender that we thought he was last season, then he should be more than willing to step up and take it. And not to mention, like, we haven't even met.
Yeah, I think Hunter got out cut out there, but I think we're going to finish. I was going to finish what he was saying. We haven't mentioned that the defense on this team is just brutal. And Steve Mason, yeah, he's a great goalie. Him and Ray Emery kind of split their reins last season because of the injuries going on between the two. I mean, that was a brutal year for the Flyers. And I mean, they didn't have much luck. They're kind of like the Columbus Blue Jackets. They didn't get much luck on that throughout the year. But you know what? This is what happens in the NHL. It's such a physical sport. You're going to see teams like that slide, you know? One thing I want to bring up, and we'll kind of move away from the Flyers and our self-assessment on these teams that we've been talking about, is the teams that are going to be making it this year. You know, I look at this year's conferences, I look at every team, and I wonder, what's the bad team? Like, you know, who are going to be the brutal teams that finish in the bottom five in the league, you know? And we talked a little bit about this a couple of episodes ago, but the teams are just getting better. You know, every team's getting better, and, you know, this is going back to parity and all that stuff. But, you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs, as much as people think they're going to be, I think they're going to be much better than they really are. And I may come out here with a bold prediction, but I don't think they're going to be in the bottom five. I don't think they're going to be in the bottom 10. I really think they're going to be close to a playoff spot. And I may be crazy. And you know what? They've got the youth. And when you give youth with guys that are veterans, do you give them one-year deals saying, go show yourself. With guys that, hey, P.A. Parento, he was a 30-goal scorer. He was amazing with John Tavares. I know he played with John Tavares. And you may say, well, what are you doing in Montreal? He was with the wrong organization. You could see that from the start. You're giving that kind of duo with young guns, you know, veterans like that. Sean Mathias, like him as a player too. You know, I don't know. I really think the Toronto Maple Leafs are a better team than people think, you know? And I really don't think they're going to be as bad. I think when you have a guy like Mike Babcock holding the reins, he's going to have everyone contending. Putnam finally is going to feel comfortable. Hunter, I am going to say they're going to be contending for a playoff spot. Remember this day because, and I've looked at this, and I don't know, maybe I'm crazy, but I really do think they may contend for a playoff spot just because you've got a guy like Mike Babcock and you have some core players that really haven't been able to show themselves because of what's happened in the last couple of years in Toronto.
You think playoffs is the answer? Sorry, I watched Dark Knight Rises the other night. I've been bothering all my friends with my Bane impression. Well, moving on to the Leafs. You know what? I've been thinking about that too. The more I've thought about this offseason, but the more I think about it, though, I still look at that lineup, and I'm not 100% if that's a playoff lineup. And I know what you're saying about a plethora of youth and guys on show me contracts, where, you know, their only goal is to prove to everyone that they are bona fide NHLers and they deserve the respect and yada, yada, yada. But the more I think about it, as we're still working on getting Vish on the show, I don't know. And, like, I'm assuming you're talking, at least because of the news today, that Jonathan Bernier and the Toronto Maple Leafs are a little ways apart when it comes to arbitration. The Leafs are offering 2.89 mil. Bernier's asking for 5.1. Fun fact, the exact middle is $4 million. So I really think that these two teams, even though it seems like they're a little bit apart, I think they're going to settle on $4 million. You know the thing about Jonathan Bernier that really bugs me? And as someone who's watched this team over the past few years, and I remember when the love fest for James Reimer began during the Ron Wilson years, and we all remember the bloggy psalming psalm, it's Reimer, Reimer, gotta be starting Reimer. And we all loved Reimer, and we all thought that he was this, like, incredible future number one goalie, and we somehow stumbled upon. And then the Leafs, you know, wet the bed in Game 7, 2013, and all of a sudden Reimer wasn't good enough. And so they get Jonathan Bernier, who, that first season in Toronto, Jonathan Bernier played really well. He had some really great saves. He stole some games for you, and, you know, it was like, wow, he got a real bona fide top 10 NHL goalie. And then he regressed last year. And it became evident, wow, this team is just that bad that no matter who's in that, they're going to look terrible. I don't think Jonathan Bernier is the goalie that we think he is yet. I don't think he's the top-tier NHL starting goaltender that can play 60, 65 games and just be that guy who, you know, you look at the best teams in the league, they have goaltenders, well, except for Chicago and Corey Crawford. But every team in the league has a goaltender who can steal you a game on any night. And to have that in your repertoire is so hard to find. And if you do have it, then you obviously see it and you can build your team around that. But I wouldn't say right now that the Leafs have that yet. I wouldn't say that Jonathan Bernier is that kind of goalie. Hell, I was in the camp before the draft, I remember I was advocating, hey, if the Leafs want to be a part of this, or if the Leafs really want to rebuild and blow this up, why wouldn't Jonathan Bernier be a trade piece? Because if you're really going to rebuild, like if you're really going to suck, and like you said, they might not even suck. This rebuild might not be the teardown that we thought it was. But if they were going to do that, then why wouldn't you try to get value for Bernier instead of trying to pay him for all these years that you're going to sign into a contract that you're going to suck for the duration of that contract anyway? And if Corey Schneider can get you a 9th overall pick, what's to say Jonathan Bernier couldn't have gotten you a top 10 pick? Now, obviously, it didn't work out like that. And if Jonathan Bernier's camp is only asking for a little over $5 million, then clearly even he doesn't think his value is that much. To be honest, I think of this Leafs team, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs. I think they'll compete. I think they're going to try to get a playoff spot. I don't think they're going to be a lottery team. But at the same time, I just don't think they have the firepower to be a top 8 playoff team in the Eastern Conference. But I don't think it's that far off. I think going into the offseason, I really thought this team would just be terrible. And I thought that they would just be bad for a very long time, and then I was fine with that. But the more I think about it, I don't think they're going to be bad for very long, but I don't know if they're going to be a playoff-worthy team next year. And as much as people think having Mike Babcock means that you're going to be a playoff team or that he's not going to stand for losing, that's fine. I don't mind if he doesn't stand for losing, but I think even he knows, he said it best in the press conference, there will be pain. Let's move on to a little bit of New Jersey Devils talk as we're still working on getting Vish online. The New Jersey Devils signed Adam Larson to a 6-year, $25 million contract, saving some RFA years. Last season was a bit of a down year for Larson, and injuries have been a concern over the duration of his contract. Chris, as I'm still working to get Vish on, what are your thoughts on Larson signing with the Devils?
Yeah, I like that signing. You know, the Devils, this is probably one of the hardest teams to talk about in the NHL right now because, you know, they've just started this rebuild. You know, they have a new general manager, they have a new coach, they fired Lou Lamoriello. This summer, it's just really the beginning of this rebuild. And you can't start a rebuild in the summer. You know, we're seeing that now. They have some young pieces like Adam Larson, Jelena. You know, they have some great young defensemen, but this is not going to be a playoff team in the upcoming years, you know. We're going to have to see what happens with him. I'm interested to see what Ray Shiro does. You know, what's his global plan? You know, what's his plan that he thinks that he can get the New Jersey Devils back into a playoff spot, back to being the New Jersey Devils that we all hated to watch in the 90s because of how boring they were, but still we're competing for playoffs. And same with the early 2000s, you know, how can we get back to that level? It's going to be interesting. It's an interesting team, like I was saying. You know, they just really, they haven't shown that they are going to be near a playoff spot in the next 5 years because of just their defense court. That's all they have. Corey Schneider, world-class goalie. I kind of feel bad that he's in a spot like New Jersey because he was stellar last year and the team was brutal and their record was pretty brutal in front of him, you know. Now, going to Larson, you know, he started in the NHL in 2011 and he played 65 games. He had 18 points in that. You know, he's not a goal scorer. He's not going to be that offensive guy that people are saying, oh, yeah, that's what he can be. That's what like they drafted him for. He's not that going to be the offensive defenseman. He's going to be your solid two-way defenseman that'll get an occasional goal, but he's going to be going against the best players. And that's what New Jersey Devils want from him, and that's what they drafted him for. You know, I know there's been some injury problems and all that, but they're going to have to work with that. You know, the Devils are an interesting team. I keep on saying that because they have so many old guys and veterans, and I wonder what they're going to do with them. You know, and these guys are like Patrick Elias, Travis Zajac, you know, they've been there since the beginning. Zubris, you know, they've been there since the beginning. They've been brought up with the Lou Lamoriello system. Now they're going through Ray Shiro's system. I look at those guys and see them being trade targets, you know. One of the greatest Czech players to ever play in the NHL and Patrick Elias, you know. Maybe he wants to go out trying to win a cup. Why not try to do that, you know? They do have some good pieces, though, you know, saying that, they do. You know, Corey Schneider, like I was saying, he signed a great contract, so he got a great deal for him. But why would he want to be there, you know, through this whole rebuild? You know, he went from a hard situation in Vancouver, and now he wants to be in New Jersey and finally win a cup. That's what his dream was, and become a number one goaltender. Now he's that number one goaltender, and he's playing an absolute crazy amount of games, but he has not gotten the wins that he wanted.
Yeah, and I do feel for Schneider. Speaking of the Devils, join us online right now is a man who is the sports director at OntarioSportsRadio.com, one of my favorite knowledgeable minds for sports, pop culture, women, whatever. He's a fascinating guy. I love talking to him. And we got him right now on the Hockey Guys podcast, Vishal Hussain. Hey, Vish, how's it going, man?
How's it going, Hunter?
Not too bad. Not too bad. I'm really glad to hear your voice. It's one of my favorites
to
listen to.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It has been a while. Let's get right into it. Me and Chris were just talking about, or I guess Chris and I, that's the grammar Nazi in me. Chris and I were just talking about Adam Larson's new contract with the Devils. When you heard the news and heard the term on it, what was your initial reaction?
Well, as soon as I heard it, it was the first contract that sprung to mind was Slava Voynov. So, you know, at the time, Voynov hadn't put up great numbers. The LA Kings had paid for potential. And I think that's what the New Jersey Devils ended up doing as well. Now, Voynov signed his contract in 2013, so you'd think there'd be some inflation there somewhere. That turned out not to be the case. It's kind of in line with the contracts that young defensemen around that age signed. Roman Josi signed a deal about 7 years, $28 million, something like that. Jake Muzzin's at about $4 million. And then, as I mentioned, Voynov, same $4 million. So it's on line with the contracts that we saw, and, you know, that's just the way it goes. And to get a guy locked up, you know, you don't have to worry about a bridge deal and anything like that. So I think they made a good deal. It falls in line with a lot of other people. Now let's hope he doesn't end up in a Voynov situation. But other than that, you know, I think it's a fine deal for the Devils and for the player. They're paying for potential, make no mistake about that. They got 3 years of unrestricted free agency bought out, and that's the deciding factor in taking $4.16 million. So I think good deal for both the player and the team, and I think that you'll see leaps and bounds improvement in Adam Larson's numbers because he was absolutely outstanding in the second half of the season when Pete DeBoer got fired. So I think that's a deal that's going to work out for both sides.
Hey, Vishal, Chris here. So I think the main question for me is, what does Ray DiCiro do with the veterans still on this team? You know, you've got guys like Travis Zajac and Patrick Elias and Michael Cantillari, Zubris, you know. These are still pretty good players, and you can get a good amount for it. Do you see them being traded, or do you think they stay with this? They finished their years with this team.
Well, I think they gotta keep those guys, because if you look at somebody trying to just run with a younger lineup and keep them as your key players, you end up in an Edmonton Oilers situation, and that's probably not a good thing for the organization moving forward. I think Ray Shiro and John Hines understand the need to have veteran players on the team, especially a guy like Patrick Elias. Say you get Pavel Zacha on the team this year. Having a guy like Patrick Elias as a soundboard in your first season is invaluable to a guy like Pavel Zacha. It's a Stanley Cup champion, and a lot of those guys have played in the Stanley Cup Finals with the Devils in 2012, Mike Camilleri notwithstanding. So I think they need to keep those guys. Mike Camilleri is a guy that's been in this situation before. He knows rebuilding teams. He's a guy that scores 20, 30 goals a year when healthy. That's a big caveat in and of itself. But you need those guys in your lineup, and they're going to be the ones that bring on the next generation, because Ray Shiro talked about it. You know, he's talked about it all summer and since he's been hired, that they want to be fast, attacking, and supportive. And, you know, those guys may not fit the fast and attacking mode, but they definitely fill the void of being supportive. So having those guys on the team is invaluable. Now, of course, if a trade offer that can't be refused comes on the plate of Ray Shiro, then I say he does it. And, you know, a lot of those guys are upcoming unrestricted free agents, so maybe there's a market for them at the trade deadline. But as of right now, I don't see them moving those guys, especially because, like I said, it ends up being an Edmonton Oilers situation. So that's something that you don't want to fall into at all.
I think if you ask the majority of New Jersey Devil observers, who is Mr. Devil, I think unanimously the answer would have been Lou Lamoriello. And obviously we saw it on last week's show, Lou Lamoriello went to the Toronto Maple Leafs. I won't ask you about what you think he'll do in the smoke. But what I will ask is, what are your memories of Lou as essentially being the head honcho of the New Jersey Devils when every single move in the organization he had a hand in, and the way that business was done, the way that players acted, the way that he controlled his staff? He really had a grip on things. What are your memories of Mr. Devil?
Well, for me, I think, you know, like you said, it's just the pure control. For Lou Lamoriello, he had a hand in everything, from overseeing the hiring of the security guards at the Prudential Center and the Meadowlands back in the day, you know, even little things like that. He had a hand in that. The biggest memory for me is I was in New Jersey, and I remember I saw him leaving the Prudential Center, and he knew all the security guards by name. And to me, that was, you know, that's a huge thing, because, you know, people remember that, and you have to understand that, you know, this is, yes, it's a sport, it's a business, but at the same time, you have to deal with people as well. And, you know, some people didn't agree with Lou Lamoriello's philosophies in New Jersey. A lot of players, you know, chafed under him. Scott Gomez is a prime example, thought, you know, I can't be here. He's stifling my personality with all these rules, staying in hotels before playoff games at home, things like that. But then those guys leave the New Jersey Devils organization, and when they leave, they realize that, you know what, the way Lou ran things was something that a lot of guys needed. A guy like Scott Gomez needed that Lou Lamoriello influence. And, you know, I think a lot of people fail to realize that, you know, Lou is so important to the New Jersey Devils that, you know, when a player goes to a different organization from New Jersey, they have nothing but good things to say about Lou. So to me, that's the biggest thing, is that just how much of a people person he was. You know, for an example, I was at the Prudential Center in 2012 looking for work. You know, I've always wanted to work in the New York, New Jersey area. So between games 1 and 2 of the Stanley Cup Finals, I'm sitting, you know, outside the Prudential Center, and I see him get into his car. He's about to make a left turn to get out, but he needs a lane to go because there was traffic. And he looked over at me, and, you know, I kind of signaled him if he had a moment. And he rolled down his window, and, you know, he asked what I was doing. And I was in a suit because I realized, you know, if you're in this situation and you're looking for work, you have to go dress to your best. So I go to him, and he says, go inside and, you know, talk to Mike Levine, who's their director of communications and media relations. And so I go inside, and, you know, obviously the security guard in there is going to be incredulous. Like, who said you could come in here? And I said, you know, Mr. Lamarillo did. He just left. And they said, oh, yeah, I'm sure he did. And I explained the circumstances. And then they called up. Mike Levine brought me in. And, you know, I had an interview with them. And I think three weeks later after that interview, I get a letter in the mail from the New Jersey Devils. And I thought, okay, maybe, you know, there's something here. It ended up being, you know, a letter from Lou Lamarillo, hand-signed, that, you know, sorry I couldn't talk more outside the Prudential Center, but hopefully you had a good interview with Mike Levine, and, you know, unfortunately there's nothing for you right now, but we'll definitely keep you in mind. And that was something, you know, that Lou did, and, you know, he didn't have to do something like that, but, you know, to do it to somebody who just walked in off the street is just, it's unbelievable. And the kicker is I was able to cover the Lou Lamarillo press conference last week, and I talked to him, and he remembered that moment. And that speaks volumes of the man that Lou Lamarillo is. And, you know, Toronto's getting a hockey man here, and, you know, Kyle Dubas and Mark Hunter's been a hockey man all his life. They're going to learn a lot from Lou Lamarillo. You know, it reminds me of Kevin Hart when he says, Dad says, you're going to learn today, and every day is going to be a learning experience for that Toronto Maple Leafs organization, and they definitely, definitely need it. I think the media is going to have to be careful, too, because you don't cross the boss. That was one thing in New Jersey that was always paramount.
Yeah, that's a really cool story, and I mean, like, that's just who Lou Lamarillo is, it seems like. You know, he has so many stories that you hear like that, and he's just a nice, sincere guy, and it's just the definition of what you want from a hockey guy. And yeah, I mean, you know, there's, you want to see people like that. You know, that's just a kind guy that can do stuff like that. And yeah, that's an awesome story. I think we're getting a little backtrack from Hunter's mic. I'm not really sure, but power through it. Yeah. We power through stuff like that because we are the hockey guys, and we're just that cool. But, I mean, like, that's an awesome story. And it's just, like you said, no, he doesn't have to do that. He's just a good guy and sincere guy. And, you know, when you bring that to your organization, I said last year when our last show, when that news broke, I said, you know, this is just gives instant credibility to the Toronto Maple Leafs, because you bring in a guy with that stature that has been one of the best general managers in the NHL, one of the most respected. And now he's on your organization going through this rebuild. I think Lou Lamarillo will for sure be in the Hall of Fame because he has for sure been one of the best general managers the NHL has ever had.
He's actually already in the Hall of Fame, so.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. He is.
He was inducted in 2009. Yeah. He's been there, done that. Yeah. So you bring a Hall of Fame resume right to your front doorstep, and that's going to be, like I said, invaluable. And Lou said himself, if Kyle Dubas isn't a general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs once I'm done here, then he did something wrong. So it's just invaluable for those guys to have him in the organization. And, you know, it's going to be a culture shock for Lou, too, because, like I said, he ruled with an iron fist, and I don't know if that's going to fly so much in New Jersey. I think there's going to be, or in Toronto, I think that's going to have to be an adjustment made on both sides. I think Dubas, Hunter, and Shanahan are going to have to realize that Lou is the way he is. I mean, a 72-year-old man isn't going to change his ways completely, if at all. So I'm interested to see how the dynamic works out, and, you know, having a front row seat to it will be exciting. So I'm looking forward to the Lou Lamarillo era in Toronto, no matter how weird it is.
Yeah, and what's your thought on Ray Shiro? Do you think he's doing the right job, and can he be the guy? Quickly, because we're running out of time here, but I'd just like to hear your little thought on that.
Absolutely. I was a little apprehensive when he was hired, because, you know, one Stanley Cup in the, you know, 7 years or so that he was in Pittsburgh with Malkin and Crosby in their primes on your team, you kind of scratch your head. But I think Ray Shiro was dealt a fresh slate here. He doesn't have those guys that, you know, you just have to build your team around. He's got financial flexibility here. Devils have a ton of cap space. He hasn't thrown money away on unrestricted free agents this year. It's been, you know, he's been cautious where he spent. I think John Moore was one of his signings and Jim O'Brien. So he's doing the right thing. He's building the right way. He knows that he has to do it through the draft. I think the Pavel Zacha pick, the last one of the David Conti, Lou Lamoriello era, was a home run for the Devils based on who was available at their spot. And so I think he's on the right track, and he can't deviate from that. I think once a general manager finds a plan and sticks to it, that's where they end up becoming successful. You look at a guy like Jarmo Kekäläinen. He knows what he wants to do. He built through the draft in Columbus, had some good pieces there, and then augmented it with the rest through trade. So I think that's what Ruchiro is doing, and I think at the same time he learned from some of his mistakes in Pittsburgh and what he did, and you know, not having depth for his players, and that's something that he won't run into because there isn't the specter of Evgeny Malkin and Sidney Crosby hanging over him right now. So I think it's a great move for him, for the organization, fresh slate moving forward, and you know, I think the New Jersey Devils are going to be an exciting team to watch. They may not win a lot, but they're not going to be your father's Devils, that's for sure.
Last question for me, Vish, and then we'll let you go. And thank you again for coming on the show. Incredible story with Lamoriello. I really appreciate that. My last question is, John Hines is now the newest head coach of the New Jersey Devils, the youngest coach in the league at only 40 years old. Just quickly, what are your expectations for him going into it? Obviously, a lot of people are expecting New Jersey Devils to be somewhat of a mediocre team this year. What are you expecting from Hines in terms of system, in terms of what he can do for your younger players, et cetera?
Well, first of all, letting the younger players play is key. The last couple of years in New Jersey, young guys have sat for over-the-hill veterans, and you know, I think there was a lot of emphasis placed on veterans, and there should be, but the right kind of veterans. Now, when you have a guy like Steven Gionta, who's a great fourth liner playing second, third line minutes over a guy like Jacob Josephson, who just had an outstanding World Hockey Championship, that's a problem. And, you know, John Hines isn't married to anybody on the Devils rosters. He has no favorites. He doesn't know anybody. So, you know, they added Kyle Palmieri at the draft, and they've added some younger pieces. They're getting faster. They're getting younger. They're giving every opportunity. You know, it would have been easy to bring back Scott Gomez, 34 points last year in 57 games, but they decided, no, we're going to give our younger guys a chance, and that's what you're going to see with the Devils. You're going to see a lot of fast-paced hockey. The last time they tried that, it was John McClain in 2010-11, and that ended up being a little bit of a disaster, but I think John Hines, you know, with his experience in Wilkes-Barre, with 5 years of coaching down there, his experience with the U.S. National Team Development Program, all that is just going to be very vital for him moving forward. And the one thing that Pittsburgh did well over the last 5 years was bring young defensemen into the lineup. And what's New Jersey's strength? It's the young defensemen. So John Hines knows what to do. He's brought his assistants that he wants. There's no links to the Devils of past. There's no shadow hanging over the organization anymore. So John Hines, you know, you're going to see a lot of defensemen activating off the back end and joining the rush, and that's the kind of defensemen that the Devils have now. So, you know, with Damon Severson, Eric Jelena, Adam Larson, all these guys can join in the rush and, you know, really contribute. So I think that's what you're going to see from John Hines' system, and I think, you know, the Devils won't have a great season. It's going to be a lot of growing pains inserting these youngsters in the lineup. I think John Hines realizes this, but at least those young guys are going to get a chance to play. And that's the most important thing for the organization right now, is to get younger, because last year they were in a place where they're old and they're not good. And that's just something that you can't have. So John Hines is in a good situation, just as Ruchiro is. And I think, you know, he's going to have a good year. He's saying all the right things at rookie camp. All the rookies loved him. And so did Damon Severson, who played in the NHL last year for a different NHL head coach, two of them actually. So, you know, I think it's going to be exciting for Devils fans, even though the results aren't there. At least they're going to get to see their young prospects play.
We got to fly, bud. It's been a slice. Always good talking to you. I'm so glad that we were able to get you on the show. I think I'm moving back.
Sure, thanks for having us.
Yeah. And that looks like that's our show, you know. We end out with a bang with Hunter cutting out, and, you know, it was fun having Vishal on. Thank you again, man. And, that was an awesome story. I really like that story and hearing from a guy like that.
Yeah, for sure. So, no problem. And we'll talk to you guys soon. Have a great day.
All right. Same with you, man. And that's the end of the Hockey Guys show. You know, remember, we have a competition. Follow the Hockey Guys main Twitter account, favorite, and retweet the account. If you do all this, you are entered in the draw for a free shirt or hat.
Hey,
old
Christopher!
We gotta work with this technology, you know? We're in the 21st century, and we're still cutting out on here. So we'll work with that throughout the next week. Next week, we'll have some big guests, and we'll be sure to have better technology. But remember, follow the Hockey Guys on the main account to be entered into the account. Follow. And I just want to say into the pool of cool things. And just want to say one thing. We are hitting record numbers, people. Thank you for listening to the Hockey Guys. You are the reason we do it.
Yeah, we've been killing it on the numbers lately. Thanks for taking over, Chris, while my computer's at you-know-what. Like you said, go to the hockeyguys.net. Check out Just Fish and Hockey at justfishandhockey.com. We're expecting some big guests next week hopefully we'll do one or more shows. And hopefully our mics won't drop on us. Anyway, this has been episode 56 of the Hockey Guys podcast. Thank you for listening, ladies and gentlemen. Enjoy the rest of your day. Take it easy, folks. We'll